Welcome to the Motherhood Village podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Gonzalez Cumberbatch, and I know firsthand that it takes a village to raise a child, but most importantly, that it takes a village to uplift a mother. A mother's village is necessary and can take up many forms. Consider this podcast as part of your Motherhood Village. No matter the season of motherhood you're in, every conversation will give you more tools to add to your parenting toolbox, and you'll feel supported, inspired, and uplifted. So let's get into an informative and empowering conversation. Hello and welcome to the Motherhood Village podcast. I am on with a very special guest. I have Dr. Carl Youssef, who is a physician with a passion for helping children have access to health care. He's the owner of Total Pediatric Care Clinic in Fort Lauderdale that has the sole focus of providing health care to children and providing support to the mothers who endlessly care for them. They see themselves as partners of mothers and families during a critical period of their lives. How are you, Dr. Youssef? Carl, how do you want me to address you?
Honestly, whatever you like. Dr. Youssef's fine.
Okay, perfect. How are you today?
I'm good, Nicole. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I'm so excited to speak with you. Okay, before we dive in, I always ask my guests to name a favorite book or one that made a great impact. It could be anything, truthfully, but anything that you feel like my listeners can kind of relate to and get inspiration from or can have an impact on them.
Absolutely. Was The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. Okay. And what that did for me, it just taught me that I'm allowed to dream bigger. And I think a lot of people maybe don't need that permission, but need that realization that they can dream bigger. And that book really showed me that. So I thought it was valuable.
No, I love that. Have you heard of Big Magic?
I believe I have as well.
It's on the same aspect. I actually think it might have been the lady who also wrote Eat, Love, Pray. But anyway, the same kind of thing. Like, I have it, and it's one of those reads that you keep going back to because it just helps you dream bigger and saying, like, what is your purpose? And like feed into that, whatever that magic is that you have. So it sounds like it's similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was very motivational.
Very cool. All right, let's dive into it. Right. So can you share, so you're a pediatrician. Well, you're not a pediatrician. So that's actually, you're an ER doctor, correct?
Correct. Yes, you're right.
And I know that because we know each other outside of this. But share with me your very high level, your inspiration to acquire Total Pediatric Care. And how an ER doctor goes into pediatric care, and then we'll dive into all the nitty-gritty stuff, informing our guests and moms and all the things. But yeah, talk to me a little bit about how your kind of trajectory into this path.
Absolutely. So yeah, I am an emergency medicine doctor by training, but in emergency medicine, we see pediatrics all the time. Mm-hmm. It's all-encompassing in general. Sure. So I had a lot of pediatric training in my general residency training as well. In terms of starting to run Total Pediatric Care, it was just an impact I wanted to make. It was just something big that I thought I could do and that I still believe I can do, which is provide amazing care for children. And that's something that our whole institution strives to do. So I knew that there are in the medical space, there are a lot of larger institutions, and sometimes they can become detached from actually being focused on the patient. And I felt that I would be well positioned as a physician to actually deliver care at the earliest time to kids.
Sure. I love that. And I know we can go even further into that, but for the sake of the time that we have here, why don't you talk about maybe then some of the key challenges that you've encountered ensuring the access to healthcare for children, especially in the Fort Lauderdale, Florida region, and how TPC, Total Pediatric Care, kind of addresses some of these challenges?
Absolutely. So in terms of key challenges we've encountered in the Fort Lauderdale area, this is actually even more a bit of a Florida area, issue going on right now. But in Broward County alone, 20% of kids are all on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And over the last the state of Florida has actually been cutting Medicaid for kids. It's called the Medicaid Unwinding Program. Anybody can Google it. They will see a lot of articles and a lot of information about it. So in the last year, about 700,000 kids were cut off of Medicaid.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's high. And this year, they're expecting another 1 million kids to be cut off. And so that's a major issue facing healthcare in the Fort Lauderdale area, since a lot of families do depend on that. And we serve families who depend on Medicaid. So when they get their Medicaid cut, it becomes difficult for them.
Sure. So how has Total Pediatric Care kind of come in and said, okay, we have this problem. How do you address it and how do you try and alleviate? Because, I mean, that's a lot. You said 7,000.
So last year, 700,000. This year is expected another 1 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you come in? Where, you know, now your wheels are turning. So talk to me about what are some of the things that you've and your team have kind of come up with to try and tackle this really, really large issue.
Absolutely. So, I mean, tackling these large issues is by no means an easy feat, yeah. And solutions are by no means complete solutions, right? So either sometimes partial solutions, sometimes, you know, attempts. What we've done is we've done a couple things. First is we know that there are a lot of currently uninsured patients. And what we've done for those patients is we've rolled out 10 free donated visits every week that we do for just uninsured families. And so that's just something baseline that we do as a service back to the community. In addition to that, we've also rolled out low-cost programs that would be probably about $30 a month. Mm-hmm. And that's not, you know, of course that helps a certain amount of people, but we're also speaking with local officials to see how we can sponsor more kids who are getting unenrolled from Medicaid.
Mm.
Again, we see this as an issue because when those kids go get unenrolled from Medicaid, emergency rooms fill up and a lot of kids don't get care. And it actually affects kids who do have insurance because at this point they're also in schools with other kids who are more, you know, could be more sick. It's
a trickle down effect.
Exactly. So that's how we are currently handling the situation. Yeah. There's a lot of other things in the background, but that's just the thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Then what do you also see as maybe some key needs for children in our community? And how do you envision your practice contributing to addressing those needs? So you just mentioned kids are going to school and different needs. Like, what are you seeing as the most healthcare issue within the community?
Ooh, all right. Well, that's actually a good question. So pressing healthcare concerns facing children today, I would say there's a lot of pressing health concerns, right, that are emerging. You hear about obesity, you hear about mm-hmm. pandemics, right? But actually a big one that is really emerging currently is mental health issues. And there's a huge shortage of child psychiatrists, and it's becoming very, for their kids to be recognized early.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine. It's mental health. I think there's different kind of therapies, whether occupational therapists. I think a lot of doctors are pulling away from the what used to be like the well-oiled machine and branching out on their own, not taking insurance. So she was working with, and I won't say the name of the hospital, and they were like, yeah, you're on like a 6-7 month waiting list because they didn't have any occupational therapists. And to your point, even psychiatrists and mental health therapists, like, and I think it goes to the insurance part, which is funny because we were just talking about the Medicaid, but yeah, I think, and that poses a challenge, right? Because her and I were talking, I'm like, wow, well, that gap is just going to get wider of the haves and the have-nots, right? Because you have the haves that are like, okay, well, my son needs this, so, you know, mom and dad got to make it happen, and they might rearrange some things, but they'll make it happen. And then you have the have-nots that are like, hold on, to your point, whether they're on Medicaid or not, and not being able to provide things that are as basic as occupational therapy, mental health therapy, pediatric care, and that's a very scary thought of what that looks like as we just have more families and more people, like what that looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
I mean, as mental health emerges and a lot of focus is now on mental health, we, you know, in the past there was a lot of mental health being missed. And I think there's a goal, an overall goal to catch and address mental health issues earlier on. That's a big goal that we focus on within our clinic, actually.
Yeah. And how do you hope to, like, is there even a checklist that you even ask? Like, what are signs that you look for? And if I'm hearing you correctly, it's more on the child side, correct? Not necessarily for mom, which that's what's near and dear to my heart, is helping the moms. But to your point, it is, I talked with Dr. Hamilton. She's the medical Kat's medical director for Joe D, and she's a behavioral psychiatrist. And she's like, we have kids coming in as low as like 6 years old, 7 years old. Like, it's real. So how do you hope to kind of change that? Is there a checklist? Or are there certain things that you're looking for?
Absolutely. And so mental health, you know, it encompasses the kids, but it also encompasses the parents. I mean, that's, you know, parents are a very integral part of their children's lives. Mothers are with their children all the time. And if one person is struggling, the other usually is. And so we do have partners that help mothers with you know, their healthcare needs.
Sure.
We focus on the children as well. And so what we do on our end, obviously in general pediatrics, there are assessments for children mm-hmm. that are geared towards catching children early who may have any struggles with mental health.
Sure.
And additionally, our physicians there are trained to look for those things. And that's a big key element as well.
Absolutely. Of just knowing what to look for. And I would imagine even going back to the time, because I know one of the things I hear a lot of my moms is that other pediatric offices, it's in and out, right? It's like 1, 2, 3, you know, I can't see you or whatever the case may be, or they can't see, or it's like every 5 minutes. And the moms are like, no, like we need more of that one-on-one care, because to your point, when you have that, then you could be more vigilant to say, okay, let's really address this, as opposed to being in and out and saying, okay, we're going to see person after person after person. But it comes with intention and I'm sure hard work and time and all the things. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a big thing is are you getting time with your pediatrician? You know, as we gravitate into more of the business model of medicine. So, you know, a lot of parents may notice that they're going to chain pediatric places as opposed to the mom and pop shop from before, you know, the chain places with like 10, 15 locations. And at that time, they may feel a little bit like they're getting
sure.
less time. So we always make it a big focus to give parents time and attention that they need to feel that they've taken care of their child.
Sure.
So
I love that. What are some of the most pressing health concerns that you think parents can do at home? So you mentioned the mental health and, like you said, obesity, I'm sure diabetes, like it's then in the area that I know you're at, there's the food deserts that they call them, right? So you might not have access to quality food and certain things. What do you think in, I'll make this a two-part question. What are maybe some things that families listening to this can do at home to maybe address these things, right? And then the second part, what do you think is some general issues facing general pediatric care and some steps that you think maybe should be in the field to kind of, I don't want to say get rid of them, but overcome them. But let's do part one first, which is what are some things that parents can do at home, just like make slight changes. And we're talking children's health. We're talking maybe toddler stage and up, right? Because newborn, that's a whole new thing. And there's certain things. And I feel like looking back, it's so easy. You're either giving formula, breast milk, some baby food cut, you know, and that. But we're talking toddler where they start becoming more picky and you don't know what to eat, what not to eat. So yeah, what are some things that parents can do at home?
Absolutely. So, well, parents, you guys are amazing. You are already doing a lot at home. Mothers and
yes.
fathers out there, you are already doing a lot at home. Now, are there some tweaks that could be done? Absolutely, you know, for all of us, right?
Sure.
In terms of healthcare issues that are facing children, what could be done on a parent's side to try to improve those things is
yeah.
to really be aware that you actually have a lot of impact over your child's health. And that just, you know, that's a primary thing. You mm-hmm. just feel empowered that you have a lot of effect on your child's health.
Sure.
And there are basic things that, you know, maybe our parents used to tell us and now we tell our kids, and enforcing those does matter. So eating healthier, right? So not taking shortcuts on fast food mm-hmm. makes a big difference in your child's life, mm-hmm. makes a big difference in their development.
Or the processed
well.
Food, yeah.
Absolutely. So
yeah.
And we can have a whole separate podcast on that probably if you know, if we dug into it. In addition, making sure kids are exercising. There's a big lack of physical activity nowadays. And
social media, phones, all the things, yeah.
Absolutely. And then we can jump into screen time and social media and all that. But I mean, if you were just, I guess, if I can give a 30-second basic on it, making sure your kids are eating healthier foods, That is a very key element. There are a lot of diseases that are preventable. It is preventable to have hypertension. It's preventable to have diabetes. And kids start learning those habits at a young age. Being aware that mental health does exist and it is a thing. I mean, I know it's a growing knowledge. It's a growing awareness. However, it's important for parents, mothers to be aware that, make sure that they are aware of their kids' mental status. Mm-hmm. And if they have any concerns or any questions, not waiting to go to a pediatrician and get a professional evaluation.
Sure, to the food. So let's say I'm a busy mom and I'm talking to you and I'm like, yes, Dr. Carl, you know, Dr. Youssef, like, I get it, I know, but I have like three kids, I need to get dinner on the table. Absolutely. I'm sure you hear that.
Absolutely.
I think part of why I'm so passionate about what I do, because I think a lot of times it boils down to education and you only know what you know and you don't know what you don't know, right? Why conversations like these are so important. It's why I have 184 episodes of things, because I feel like the more we can talk about things, the more we can know. So yes, so a mom or dad's coming to you, I just don't have time. So going to that, I won't even give them advertisement on here, but going to that quick fix restaurant or a fast food spot, it makes it easier. So what do you say to someone like that? And what are some, I guess, things, health, maybe more wholesome foods, like maybe talk about that, of like even changes to things that I think parents don't realize, that it doesn't have to be expensive, that you could even make tweaks. So talk to me about that.
Absolutely. So in general, I'll preface, life is challenging, you know, especially when you're raising one child, or if not even more, it's challenging. The thing is, children look to, you know, their mother, their father as role models within their lives. Yeah. And so, to be honest, the easiest way to enact change in your child is to be that change, right? And that's something that can actually be seen as empowering. You know, you don't have to, you know, yell at your child to eat something.
Sure, if you're modeling the behavior.
If you can model the behavior. So going into more practicality, so this is, in general, you know, things like fast food, things that are quick and easy are probably usually, well, not, I don't want to say easy, but things that are fast food, you don't know the ingredients going in. Mm. Those are just going to be things to watch out for in general. Those quick microwave meals that a lot of us, you know, may have grown up on, to be honest. But really, we're trending away from those at this point. And we're looking for meals that have ingredients that you've put in yourself.
Yeah.
Really, that would be the easiest way to explain it. Is it ingredients that you've put in yourself versus are you getting something with multiple ingredients? You don't know what's in there.
Oh, yeah, that's so simple. And for those listening, I mean, I was watching the Blue Zones documentary on Netflix. And what I thought was fascinating, I mean, the whole thing was fascinating, but I was like, yay, he mentioned like how healthy beans are and legumes and all that. And he was like, you know, he mentioned, if you're in a food desert, he's like, and a lot of, unfortunately, people of color are in food deserts, right? We're talking black and brown communities, but we eat beans. So he's like, load up the plate with beans. And I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. You might not have access to maybe the Swiss chard or the kale or certain things, or maybe can't afford it, especially then we break down organic. But he was like, you have access to beans, right? Load your plate up with beans. Now, that's a bit, but I'm saying to your point, it's like work with what you got and when you have and do it to the max. If beans are healthy, then hey, you know what? We're going to have beans. And if we have to have beans and all the things, but I'm trying to think even for anyone listening, oatmeal, smoothies, any way that you can add little, but it, to your point, it does go back to mom and dad really modeling that. And I think truthfully, that is the hardest part or one of the hardest parts of parenthood. And I'm only 6 years in, but instantaneously saw that, like, I was like, oh, wait, like, it's me, you know? So if I'm not good, if I'm not doing, then how can I ever expect this little person to follow me, right? Like, it's so true. And understanding, oh, well, I got to take care of myself. I can say, no, I can eat XYZ because, you know, we're old, whatever, but it's, I can say that, but it's truly modeling that. It's something that I want to be sustainable to have in their life. So for those listening, yeah, it's be the change that you want to see with your littles. But there are sustainable ways and it doesn't have to be expensive is my whole point. Lots of fruits even. I know my little guy was not into veggies in the beginning. We did a lot of fruit. You can still get a lot of your vitamins that way. You know, he's a big fruit eater, thank God. Mangoes and all different kinds. I was raised very like apples, bananas, strawberries, plain Jane with that. my little guy loves it all. So like we are like, all right, well then we're going to pack you up with all the fruit. So you try and find the different ways to add.
Absolutely. I mean, that's very well said. And another thing, and since we're on food, something to be aware of is a lot of parents may say, well, my child doesn't like, you know, X or blank.
Yeah.
And that may be the case at that moment. However, just something to be aware of is palates are actually trainable. Mm. So a lot of us would probably be able to eat different food if our palate was adjusted to it. And so integrating little bits of carrots into the meal that they do like and integrating little bits of other foods will help expand their palate so that they are able to eat the foods that maybe they seem that they don't currently like.
Yeah, no, I love that. And actually, even thinking about it, we were talking about it in one of my mom chats because we have some new moms with little babies. And I was like, listen, going back, I wish, like, we all say, like, it is taxing newborns and even toddlers. But man, oh, man, like, my little guy ate everything back then. So my husband and I are both Caribbean influenced, a lot of flavors. So we were giving him, like, chana and curry flavors and from little, and he loved it. Of course, you know, years later, he's like, what is this? I don't want this. And I'm like, dude, you should knock it out the park. But I think the key to that is twofold. One, because we built his immune system up very well because we gave him smorgasbord of like all the things, which is why, knock on wood, I don't think he got as sick as often, especially when he went to preschool with all the germs, because we really did. Like we were like frozen raw spinach in his smoothies. Like we were giving him all the things. So that's one. And then two, I think to your point, it helped expand his palate. And another thing I learned, and there's memes about this, and it is funny. It's not, but it is. Like your kid could like something and then you get a bunch of it. And then the next day they're like, no. And you're like, dude. And it's a joke with it. But there is something to say on the flip side that you think that they're not. But I think there's a statistic like you have to introduce something like 20 something times before it like registers. And it's like, all right, I'll try it. And you're like, okay, maybe. And again, a hard part of parenting is remembering that and say, well, maybe today I'll introduce a cabbage or whatever it is you want to introduce to them, or to your point, carrots or something, but just introduce it. But to your point, if it starts with your plate, then it's not extra work because you're already eating it. You're already doing it and you're not having to make something separate for them because it's part of the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And I mean, even to address the difficulty of it, and this is your whole podcast and your whole network really addresses this, is parenting is a job.
Yes.
You know,
very hard, is it going to be difficult? Tedious,
yes.
Non-paying job, yes.
Exactly. It may pay, you know, in other ways,
yes.
Right? In gratitude and in appreciation.
Yes.
And then, yeah, parenting is a job, and that's why you're here, to help parents navigate through these various issues. And
and
it's something amazing that you do. So
yeah, thank you. Okay. So this comes up a lot with my moms. What do you think are some resources moms, now let's go take it to the moms, may need during prenatal, postpartum, and throughout their child's life? Like maybe talk to me about that. And I'm interested to hear your take on that. Like, again, to your point, going back, and maybe mom and dad's life, because let's bring in the dads. I had a presentation yesterday I did for a PTA meeting, and I did some statistics, and I was even blown away. Like, dads are really needed. The only unfortunate part is because there's not a lot of studies shown on the dads, unfortunately. But when there is, like, it's significantly impacted that when dad is or isn't there, like, they're basically neck and neck with mom, right? So let's say parents for the sake of this. Yeah, what are some resources they kind of need through that whole trajectory, basically through the kid's life?
Absolutely. Well, in terms of resources,
yes.
I mean, the resources the parents need are high. And there's a lot of resources parents need because their kids are living beings, and they are living beings, and, you know, they need a lot of... I would say the biggest resource, which I know sounds a bit vague, would be support, mm-hmm. right? And by support, I mean, where is their access to everything? Where is their central point? And who is directing them? You know, in every business, we're saying being a parent is a job. And in every job, you want advisors, right?
Oh, I love that.
So, you know, you wouldn't go do a job and just start. I mean, you could, but... it would be difficult to start a job on your own and just trying to figure everything out. I think having a network and having support is just a primary essential foundation. help direct you as to where do you get healthcare, where do you support yourself, where do you find physical resources. I think that's a big part for parents. If we're getting a little bit more into it, and these are just details, there's more than this, but in terms of prenatal support, I mean, a mother going through the pregnancy process, I mean, there are so many things. There's so many bodily changes, right? It's confusing to us when our body changes and we haven't been through something like that before for everybody. There are symptoms that might be confusing. You might feel moods that are confusing. You can feel pain that is confusing. Mm-hmm. You can have financial difficulties because you may not be able to perform the same exact duty that you were doing before. And is there support for that? And where is a mom's support for that, especially if she's a single mom on her own?
Yes.
And so I can go on and on about all the difficulties that a mother would face during that time. And, you know, that would be something maybe in the prenatal period. And then even just the apprehension of, am I going to be a good mother? Am I going to be able to do all the things, take care of this child? We all know it's not easy. And moms care about their kids even before their kids are actually out in the world.
Yeah. I love how you said the advisory board, because it is kind of mind-boggling that we do have the hardest job with no guidebook, as they say. However, I like to think that podcasts like mine and communities and these kind of conversations, they're tools to add to the toolbox. It's all part of it. You know, just like I'm sure when you had to sit and go to school for your boards and become a physician, and same for me when I had to sit and become a managerial accountant, there's certain things that we had to do. But for parenthood, we don't have that. So I love that of like visually having that and like saying, okay, who's going to be on your board? Who do you really trust? Who do you want to go to? Which takes me to my next question. So finding a pediatrician, that comes up a lot. And I think rightfully so. I think as pediatricians, as doctors, physicians, lead us, you're part of the advisory board, right? So talk to us about why is it so important to find the right pediatrician and what are some steps for parents to do that? And then we'll go into part three of that, which is what are some questions they should be asking to really making sure that this is the right, it's a relationship, you know? And I do want to preface that, and I know you are a physician here, but I think sometimes and I'm sure you even think of this as your own personal, like we think if we find the one doctor, like we have to be with them for life, but it's like you really have to make sure you gel and you jive. So talk to me about that. Why is it important, number one, like just even though we may know it, but speak on it. And then what are some questions that parents should ask when they're looking for a pediatrician?
Absolutely. So a bit to unpack there. And, you know, but you touched on it perfectly. A pediatrician is part of your advisory board for your child, right? Every mother wants their kid to be happy, successful, healthy, right? And these are key elements. We want ourselves to be happy, successful, and healthy. And so we want that tenfold for our children, right? And so having a pediatrician who has those aligned values, I mean, having a pediatrician in general who has that value of keeping your child healthy is very valuable. Mm-hmm. Now, the biggest thing is being a mother is already stressful, right? You are worrying about how are you going to feed your child? Yeah. Are they getting the right education? Are they learning the right things? Are they around the right people? And it's another layer of difficulty when you're also worrying, are they sick right now? Mm-hmm. And do I have somebody I trust that can tell me that they're okay? Yes. And a lot of parents want that. They just want to be told that their child is okay. They can take that one stress off of their plate and focus on the 100 other stresses that come with being a mother.
Yes.
Right? So having a doctor you trust is critical.
And then tell me some questions that would align. So if, and this comes up, and we have, like I said, I have in my group right now, right? They're like, hey, what's a good pediatrician? Who's a good pediatrician? Like everyone wants to know, right? That's like top tier. Before even giving birth, you have to find your pediatrician because you have to take them there, you know, that week. What are some questions parents should be asking to make sure that the doctor aligns? Like you said, I love that, of values. Yeah, like that is the number one priority. So speak on that.
Absolutely. So I think the biggest factor, just like you had mentioned earlier, you know, you were talking about that this is a relationship, right? You're not going to pick up a car part and just paying some money for it and walking out of the store and then it's all done. And, you know, you're actually looking for somebody who you can have a relationship with. And so those, what guides somebody to pick a pediatrician is going to be what guides somebody to have a partner or work with anybody in any kind of long-term prospect, right? So from what I've noticed, the biggest thing that parents care about is just being listened to. Mm. The thing is, mothers know their children very, very well.
Yeah.
And they're in tune sometimes, or a lot of the time, with their children, in tune with when they don't feel well, and in tune to those little subtleties about their children.
Yeah.
And so when, you know, this is just one piece, but if somebody's looking for a good pediatrician, they may feel good when that pediatrician is able to listen to them and is able to lend value to the words that they are saying. There are a lot of changes in medicine, and there are a lot of controversial things that come up, and people always have questions about certain things. So a pediatrician is somebody you should be able to have a discussion with.
I love it. And then are there any questions that they should be able to ask that they could say, I don't know, like almost like a 10-pointer, like, do you like, no, what's your favorite color? No, just kidding. But like, are there certain things to kind of pinpoint to make sure? It's almost like an interview. When they're going on the interview, what are some, well, I guess one of the biggest things would be, because that's a great point of wanting someone who's going to listen. And I think almost instantaneously, you will know when you walk in, like, okay, are they rushing me, or are they like taking the time to say, hey, because I guess to your point, that is the biggest thing, that they're going to be able to sit there and say, yeah, as opposed to saying, okay, you're done, anything else, and leaving.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, is there a checklist criteria? Not that I know,
yeah.
Right? And I don't know, you know, but I do know that if somebody's willing to listen to you and treat you as an equal and have a discussion with you and tell you, from my expertise, this is why we do this, or this is why we do that,
yeah.
And be someone there to guide you in caring for your children, right?
Sure.
Because ultimately the mom or the dad, they are the ones caring for the child. The pediatrician is your advisory. They are there to guide you and tell you, this is what we've seen work, and this is what we haven't seen work, and why. And so,
I love that. So basically, what I'm hearing from that too is maybe having someone that doesn't have the ego.
I think that goes for all relationships.
But it's tough, right? I mean, when someone is almost in that position of power, your lawyer, your accountant, anyone who may have an upper hand because maybe they know more than you in whatever that is, right? They're the expert in that. An ego can come with that. So it sounds like it's like making sure that they're very humble and ego. Like, I love that. I love painting that picture of like, because parents do know, you know, especially moms. And I think only because we're so neurotic, especially with the first one. I mean, I had our nanny like keep a log book, and we were, you know, making sure the poop and the this and how many times. And I was just, I wanted to know, what were you feeding him? You know, it's this person's watching my child. But it's easy to recognize that, okay, wait, he usually go to the bathroom this time, but now he's like, oh no, is there something wrong? So to your point is making sure that you're connecting with someone that can say, okay, let's take it back, as opposed to, you know, someone who could be like either nonchalant or on the flip side of being like, oh my God, they haven't put, oh my God, you, like you said, like, oh, we need to do all this, as you know, and almost having that like calming, like, all right, well, let's look at all the facts. I get that they're your child, and yes, parents are truly in tune, and again, more so the moms. Sorry, dads, and that, but moms really do. Tell a quick story. My son breastfed him, and for the first 2 weeks, it was my milk and all the things, and he was really lethargic. And I was neurotic after my first son, and for some time, actually my one and only son. Long story short, I was up Googling and all the things, and there's some breastfeeding Kelly, I forget her thing, but anyway, but good information. And my husband's like, "Oh, he's fine," and I'm like, I'm like, I think he's a little too lethargic. And like I said, he was only like a few weeks old. And sure enough, my husband's aunt is a registered nurse and a midwife. And I just messaged her on WhatsApp because it was late. And I just see the things. And she's like, well, how many this, how many that? Of course I knew. And I was like, oh, he's this. And she immediately got back. She's like, okay, you need to make an appointment. She was like, he's been sleeping too long. Talk with your pediatrician, whatever. So we go. And sure enough, we weighed him. And no, he wasn't getting nutrients. And I was like, oh my God, I almost killed my kid. And I'm like looking at my husband. He's like, but I thought he was fine. I'm like, no. I was like, I knew, you know, I was like, there's something wrong. Like, I know babies sleep, but I knew it was a little too much. So we had a supplement, and the pediatrician was like, fine, we'll supplement and then weigh him back. And it was a process. We supplement. And then after that, I breastfed him for like 2 years. But to your point, it's like when you know, you know. And my pediatrician could have easily said no or been like, what is wrong, you know, to make me. But it was like, okay, let's ego aside and let's figure out a part. It's all good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you had a great partner there. And
yeah.
And that's the thing. A lot of parents, I mean, just going back to resources and community.
Yes.
A lot of parents really, I mean, especially before you really started this Motherhood Village, a lot of parents create their own community just depending on who they know,
yes,
who they've spoken with before. Is grandmother, what can grandmother tell us?
Yes.
What can, you know, my friend from, you know, this yeah. place tell us? Because they're, parents need resources and they need community. And it's great that there's now more opportunity for that through
for
the
sure.
networks like the Motherhood Village.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. even I think what you're doing too, because I think it's what I love, or one of the things what I love about what you're doing is that you're really trying to get with the community as well and say, okay, let's bridge this gap, right? It doesn't have to be, and I don't know if that's the right word I'm going to use for it, but I'm monolithic. Like, it doesn't have to be like one thing, right? We can, you know, you're a pediatrician, but it's like, yeah, but I should probably also have access to this because my moms are going to leave here and have a whole nother life. We are experts in this, right? You and your team are experts in this and can do that. But are you experts in peer-to-peer groups? Are you experts to know where this is? So I think it's so beautiful that you're really connect with resources and join, because I think that's so important to further your village, you know, and say, listen, I don't have all the answers, but this is what we got for you.
Absolutely. And I mean, inspired by you, we are trying to create a mini village that includes, yes. that actually has you yeah. on there. So when parents come into our clinic now, we are providing a resources sheet.
Yeah.
And of course, having a pediatrician see your child, make sure your child's okay, address your questions and concerns is valuable.
Yes.
But we also know that there are so many other things on the other side of it.
Yes.
Both before you give birth, after you give birth, yeah. your mom's mental health after birth
yeah.
is a very big thing now.
So much.
And so we really work to try to connect families with resources to supplement those concerns even after they leave our clinic, even if it's not something that we do, to look for partners who do things.
No, I love it yeah. because it does. It takes a village. And to your point, it's almost like there's in there so much. Like, we could even talk about when going back to school and the germs and keeping healthy and all of that I'm like, oh, and the mental health aspect of that portion of it. But I want to give you the floor to say how people can connect with you, and like, what do you see next coming for Total Pediatric Care? Like, I want to give you a moment to kind of talk about that, how they can connect with you, social media's website, and then what's next for TPC.
So, I mean, in terms of how can families work with us, or how can families get to know us?
Yes.
We try to make that extremely simple for families. We know there are already a lot of hurdles and you don't need any more.
Yes.
So Total Pediatric Care, if you just put that into Google, and everybody uses Google probably 40 times a day for every single question that they have.
Yes.
And you just put in Total Pediatric Care, you'll find us, you'll find our reviews, you'll find photos of our staff, you'll get yeah. to our website through there, you'll find our phone number. That's really the biggest way to reach us. I mean, we've got an Instagram, but again, Google is going to be the best. And our Instagram is at Total Pediatric Care. But again, if you just remember the words Total Pediatric Care,
I got you.
That's pretty much, you're good from there. That and Google will take you everywhere you need.
Yes. And what's next? Like, what do you see? What's your 3-year plan?
Absolutely. So our biggest focus at this point is, how do we continue to serve moms and babies, families
sure.
and babies? There's fathers out there who are also mainly bringing their kids to the sure. to the pediatrician, but a lot of it is mothers, to be mm-hmm. you know, to be fair. And so we're just continuing to think of innovative ideas of how do we create an environment that allows mothers and their children to thrive in the way that they want
mm-hmm.
beyond just pediatric care. How do we make that visit a happy visit for both, you know, for both mom and baby? And that's a big focus of ours. How do we find excellent pediatricians to take care of mom's baby, of her most prized possession,
sure,
right?
Sure.
That's our biggest focus. And if we can do that for 3 years, we don't need to do anything more exciting than that.
I love it. Thank you so much, Dr. Youssef, for coming on. You know, I'm a big fan of the work that you're doing because of the population you're trying to serve and what you're trying to do. I have been to the location and it's such a warming environment. I know you were even plans to even make it more so because you literally just acquired it and all the things. But I am a big, huge supporter of what you're doing, and however I can continue to support, I will. But thank you so much for coming on, for sharing some awesome tips and tricks, and yeah, continued blessings to you for Love and Light. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nicole, and thank you for what you do. And thank you to all the mothers and fathers and parents out there who make this all possible.
Thank you. Yeah. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this impactful episode of the Motherhood Village podcast. Subscribe to my show so you'll never miss a future episode. You may also rate and review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with someone that can use it as part of their Motherhood Village. Remember, your village can take up many forms and you do not have to do it alone. Connect with me at themotherhoodvillage.com. Blessings to you for love and light.